Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. A little warm.
Oh, we have a bit of a heat wave. It's unpleasant, is what it is.
How's your Harmony Hub?
It worked. So I had turned it on at like 3:30, I think. 3, maybe. And it got it down to, a good mediocre 74 degrees in here. So not quite hitting the target threshold
Pretty
even
good. What's
after,
the target?
well, 72 was the target.
Oh, it's pretty low.
Well, I mean, that's because I had a feeling it wasn't going to hit it. But that was proven correct. So it had basically been running for 3.5 hours before I got here. I was kind of hoping it would, go get a little cooler because I can't run it during the show. So,
Is 72 your desired temperature, or is that just you're overshooting it because you want it to keep running?
I am comfortable anywhere between 72 and 74 degrees Fahrenheit, and literally do not want to hear from anyone about Celsius.
I thought you meant I thought you were going to say you didn't want to hear from anyone who is comfortable with higher or lower numbers.
No, I just meant that it's like a fraction of a decimal of a percentage of a point difference between those things if you're looking at Celsius. But yeah, I don't need it to be like ice cold or anything, but I
That's
want it to be
pretty
comfortable.
cool. Especially, I mean, depending on who you ask. If you ask people of a slightly older generation, they're going to want to keep it in the high 70s.
Absolutely not. Maybe that's an Arizona thing where you guys are used to certain temperatures, but
No, it
no.
is a thing here that in all of the various Facebook groups, every once a week, somebody will say, look at this air conditioning bill I got here. What do you all keep your thermostats at? And there will just be, 400 people who say like, oh, I just turn it off during the daytime and only turn it on at nighttime or whatever, and it's 85 in here and I feel fine. And then there are other people who say, you guys are insane. I keep mine at 67 degrees, or it runs the gamut. But obviously it's because it's just very expensive because it's going to run 24 hours a day here, basically. So.
Yeah, my mom's in Florida and she likes to keep it, I think, I would say 69-70, a little colder than I would like.
That
But
sounds amazing.
it's
Can we trade moms? Because my mom keeps hers at 80.
Ooh.
Yeah,
How?
she
Why?
turns it down to about 78 when she knows we're coming over.
Ugh.
It's
That's not
not
acceptable.
helpful.
And while I said 72 to 74 is okay, when you get to 75, 76, I start to get a little less comfortable, depending, especially on the activities that you're doing. Like especially if you're like cooking food or washing dishes with hot water or whatever, that you can be a little uncomfortable under those scenarios. Or if you just went for like a run or to the gym or something and then got back, you want it to be a little cooler because you gotta cool back off. So I'm not huge on the mid-70s and above.
These are all very good theories.
Yeah,
I
but
agree with them.
nobody wants to hear about that. You know what they want to hear about?
Food?
Trailers.
Oh, more trailers. It's still summertime, and there are still movies coming out. And we timed our last episode perfectly wrong for all of the Comic-Con trailers that came out.
What I loved about it is that you and I were both completely oblivious, 100% oblivious to the fact that Comic-Con was going to happen that weekend.
I mean, come on. Like, we're not 12 years old. Like, who goes to Comic-Con?
Yeah, well,
I'm kidding.
apparently
I'm
a lot of
kidding.
people. But yeah, that was pretty funny because right after we released our episode, I was like, oh, I wish we could have held it over because, the Cats thing, because we talked about the featurette that they released that Tuesday, and I was like, well, the Cats thing is going to be coming out on Friday, and obviously Friday's not good for us to record, but it just felt like a shame that we'd miss it, and maybe we talk about it later. Well, it turns out they released it on Thursday, so we could have talked about it, and then they decided to just do all kinds of other crazy stuff. And in addition to that, Top Gun was released that day, which was also a surprise because that's Top Gun Maverick, the sequel to Top Gun, which
we all knew was coming because we're all big fans of Top Gun and Tom Cruise.
Sure. I mean, I knew the sequel was coming because it'd been in talks and in development for a really long time. But Macquarie was doing it because Tom Cruise is like, hey, I like you on my impossible missions, so please do the flying jet thing.
It's a Chris Macquarie movie with Tom Cruise where he flies something on his own with a lot of really close-up camera angles, which, you know, is brand new ground for both of them. I'm kidding. I'm excited for it. I like Chris Macquarie.
Yeah, a lot of people do. I haven't seen the Impossible Missions that they worked on.
That's a shame. They're good.
I just that franchise.
It has Tom Cruise in it.
Yeah, that's a big stumbling block for me.
But it also has Simon Pegg, and then
Ving Rhames.
Obviously, and Jeremy Renner's there. And Alec Baldwin.
No, you're not winning me over.
And then there's that British lady. I forget her name.
Okay. I definitely want to see that. But we'll get to the specifics of these trailers. And then there's Gemini Man, which had a featurette. There had been a trailer that was released several months ago. This doesn't seem to expand on that significantly. And finally, the thing that I was most interested in was another trailer for Picard. They had a little teaser thing, which had basically nothing in it other than here's Patrick Stewart's face with some voiceover. And this one actually showed a few things, so it gave you some context for what was going to be happening. But it's context for fans. I have no idea what you thought. We'll get to all of that as we break these down. But first, Dan. First, we must deal with the issue of time and the timeline and machines and following up on Terminator : Dark Fate, where you and I had talked about how not jazzed we were about that trailer. And then they proceeded to have that trailer with like more talking about how great everything is and how jazzed everybody is to work on it.
They added a minute and a half featurette to the front of the trailer where they talked about how great all of these things were that we pointed out were the wrong things to be pointing out in the trailer. It was just really not a lot of follow up to get into, but it got under my skin a bit. So I have an index card here where I wrote some things down. You know, it's serious.
I love it when you prepare.
I don't take notes for this podcast anymore. I haven't done that in like 4 years.
No,
I used to take notes. Used to watch a movie and like write bullet points and stuff.
That was a long time ago.
This featurette includes what's his name, Mr. Tim Miller from Blur. He's wearing a Blur shirt.
Yeah, you can tell because it says BL Return Carriage. You are.
Yes,
but it's a really James long Cameron. Word, so you can't really fit it on a T-shirt. That
well,
word.
You know, it's symmetry and design and things. It's very important. But the trailer thingy, it also featured James Cameron in his typical long sleeve motocross shirt or whatever it is that he wears, and he illustrates a couple of bullet points about this movie that are intended, I think, to be exciting to the viewer. He said this is a bit of a return to form. He said this is R-rated. It is grim. It is gritty. It is fast, and it is intense. These are the words he used, by the way. And then he referred to it as a fast white knuckle ride. And none of those words, I would like to point out, should describe Terminator 1 or 2, despite what Mr. Cameron thinks our memories of the films should be. I mean, sure, R-rated. That we can agree on that one. Grim? No. Gritty? No. Fast, fast really got me because I don't think of those being fast action movies at all.
No, especially not the first one.
Oh God,
but
no.
And even the second one, it's not about the quickness of anything. It is entirely about the suspense of the chase.
And suspense is the good word to use there. Intensity, sure, there's an intensity there, but it is definitely a very suspenseful film. And then when he goes on to say, and I quote, "It totally follows in the footsteps of Terminator 1 and 2 and refers to it as an adrenaline rush full of terror," I think, Mr. Cameron, have you watched these movies at all, let alone recently? Because that's not what the Terminator franchise is, and that's not what we enjoyed about it. It's... Why are you encouraging this nonsense?
Part of me wonders if maybe he's just like, sure, yeah, whatever. You're going to give me money for this? I guess I'll like put a spin on it or a twist on it, give it a stamp of approval, and then we can just all move on with our lives.
Maybe he's just excited and a publicist said these are some of the talking points that we want to mention about the movie. But you would figure... because James Cameron is sort of known as a guy who does things at his own pace and when he feels like doing things and to his own tune, etc.
Like releasing a 4K remaster of The Abyss.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not into it, he's not going to do it. So you would figure he's the kind of fella who is going to stand by his original thoughts and opinions on things. I mean, you know, whatever. He's allowed to say what he wants to say, but you don't figure him as the kind of guy who's going to say, like, oh, we're making another Terminator? Cool, money in the bank. Let me get out there and hype that thing up for everybody. You fully expect him to be the kind of guy who, if the movie was not in the vein of the films that he had initially created, he would kind of disavow and say, like, yeah, whatever. It's not... they're taking it in a new direction, or whatever they said about the Star Trek franchise when JJ took hold and they tried to politely say, this is different and it's not the thing that some people are going to be wanting, but it's going to be cool. Don't worry about it.
Oh, man.
That's not what James Cameron is saying.
I completely forgot to add to the topic list. Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, Quentin Tarantino. I don't know that there's enough there to say yet, aside from that coke-fueled rant where he sounds like Donald Trump, but... yeah, Quentin Tarantino's making a Star Trek movie that's going to be in the Chris Pine timeline. Stay tuned for more details.
Except he doesn't understand
time, black holes, alternate universes and things. And this is, you know, I get it because in the, what was it, the commentary track? I'm sure I told you before about it. I don't know if you ever listened to it. There's a commentary track for Hot Fuzz where Edgar Wright and Quentin Tarantino just sit there and like talk about movies for 2.5 hours or whatever. Edgar Wright points out that he was doing, you know, some split screens to sort of like retime the joke so it would be a little faster. And Quentin Tarantino goes, oh, I'm glad I don't know those tricks at all or whatever you're talking about, because that sounds like I would mess something up, or that sounds weird, or I don't like it. So he's kind of intentionally ignorant of a lot of things.
Yes.
that don't feel like, you know, 70s Hollywood cinema or whatever. So he's really just living in the Shatner days, and that's all he really cares about. But he's gonna play with, you know, the characters and the chess pieces that are currently in the franchise lexicon. So that'll be a train crashing into another train, falling off of a bridge, getting shot by a tank or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Sorry to derail you. It just occurred to me when you were discussing.
No, it's fine. We're not a news show. We don't owe anyone any sort of linear thoughts here. But
no,
I was just really struck by how enthusiastic James Cameron was, and all of the words he used were the opposite of the words that I would choose to use to describe what was good about Terminator 1 and 2. And he was holding those up as the things that this new movie would carry on. In addition to Tim Miller just dropping curse words about how effing cool it is that he's making an effing Terminator movie, and it's like, all right, fella, we get it. You made Deadpool.
Yeah. He's got like one speed. Also, am I correct in assessing that those are all red cameras?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really looking. I can look right now if you want.
Because I was watching it and I was just like, he seems like the kind of guy who would shoot with red. He seems like he owns some Oakleys.
This should be, oh, there it is in my history here. I'm looking at my YouTube history. I don't know much about Mr. Tim Miller's personal habits. That is That looks like that is either an Alexa or a Sony Venice. It's moving very quickly.
Mm.
Can't see it. This is just people swinging props. There's his BLUR shirt. There's a blue screen. That, nope, can't tell. Cut off. Nope, can't tell. A lot of robotic camera heads here. Naturally. Okay, what do we got here? Oh, that is an Alexa. But it has a big sticker on the side that has like a Punisher skull with a red eye on it to make it look kind of Terminator-y.
See, I think I might have seen the red circle-y thing.
You're thinking of the red weapon logo, which is a silly Oakley-looking skull type thing. But luckily, somebody had the forethought to make them use a real camera on this movie. I mean, who knows why though? Because everything's CG in it.
No. Not to be those people, which we always are, who are
not
pining.
To be the people we are.
Who are constantly pining for physical, practical effects, but...
Sure.
There is a hollowness to what is on display. Not specifically just because of the fact that certain techniques were used, but just it doesn't read the way I would like it to read.
Yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves here because this is just a trailer, so there's still time to do some stuff.
I just mean in terms of like the shot that they're getting, not the technique.
Oh, sure.
Like,
there's this one shot right here that just popped up in the trailer because it was still running, where Arnold is shooting the metally but not metally liquidy Terminator guy right in the face on top of a truck, and the guy's holding the gun. I don't know why he's holding it. It's not a bayonet, but he's just blasting him in the face, and the guy's face is like shaking as it gets torn away. But you see the little Terminator skull underneath it. But he's clearly just shaking his head. Like this is one thing that is apparently not yet a solved problem, and that is that people do not know how to appropriately illustrate recoil, whether it be the gun or being hit by a bullet on camera yet. So it always looks fake and terrible.
Yeah, which is also objectionable when Linda Hamilton is gunslinging. But we beat that horse already again.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the other piece of follow-up, which is not a horse, but another quadruped, which isn't a quadruped. Mm. It walks on two legs and it has a large chest, and that is cats.
Cats.
Yeah. When we talked about the featurette before this trailer was out, I had speculated that the reason why the featurette was released was to soften the blow of whatever it was they were going to be releasing.
Technology.
Yeah, they want you to know that there were people who are working really hard on the dance and the singing and stuff and the choreography, and they made sets and things. They wanted to get that out there ahead of the story that everyone would write when they saw the trailer, which is, oh my God, there are a bunch of CG cats which have actors' faces pasted onto them, and
they certainly made some design decisions in this movie, didn't they?
They did. And I was talking to some people who were asking me online about the specifics of this, and like, is this work just bad? The execution of this work, and I tried to separate it out and say, you know, there's the execution of the work. The quality, like, oh, sure, like the face doesn't feel like it's integrated in this frame or whatever. And then there's the concept.
And to be fair, some of the shots in the trailer are much better than others.
Yes. And especially like, I want to say like all the shots with Hudson and Jason Derulo were bad. Just
and also
flat out bad.
The very first shot of Taylor Swift, she's the whitish looking one, right?
No. That's the.
Oh, that's the dancer lady.
Yes, the
ballet
lady.
The very
lady.
First shot of her where she kind of like, you know, does a little bit of a turnaround while she's looking at something, that one looks very wrong.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hard. I understand. I am at my job. I am literally tracking something onto somebody's face right now that's moving several axes and rotations. And it's a lot of pain.
And you want to talk about Uncanny Valley. Like, there is no human reference for what they are aiming to do with this, too. So it's not going to feel natural no matter what they do.
Yeah, which is part of the thing where I was talking to some people, and they're just like, oh, well, they just did a bad job of this. Like, they could do a better job. And it's like, no, it's not. It's not really the execution. Like, the execution's a component of what you're objecting to in this trailer. But even if that was flawless, conceptually, this is incredibly strange. The design, even if it were immaculate, would be bizarre beyond belief. Even if there were people in costumes and makeup, and they somehow managed to approximate this fur coverage and integration with the faces and everything in a on-set sense, even if they did all that stuff, that would still be incredibly weird because it's just a weird thing. There's no way to get around it.
People in practical makeup doing wire work as they're jumping on these 30-foot tall fake beds, it'd still probably look a little strange.
Yeah, like it's all just weird. Like there's the whole thing where she's got the knife and the fork at the dinner table, and it's just like what scale is this at? Because those are enormous, but then like 5 seconds later, they're at a different scale. Like this is not really supposed to be taken literally. And then I saw some other people who I was not corresponding with directly, but who were quoted in articles by other people that, you know, they should have just gone and made this movie as with animated CG cats, like as if there were photoreal cats a la The Lion King that were singing and dancing and doing all this, and that would have also been bad.
Well, The Lion King's an interesting comparison, too, because they attempted to err on the side of making the animals anatomically correct, but then talk. And then this one, they're like, well, they're humanoid, so we gotta kind of draw a line as to what features we pull from humans and what we pull from actual animals. And in this movie, they are far closer to just being humans in cat suits than they are actual animals. But it's a choice they had to make because it's like it's always gonna look like, you know, a blend of the two, but where do you pick? And then, you know, you got that big tail there too, which is weird.
Yeah, especially when they're doing those spins around and the legs separate, and you're just like, where is that connecting exactly between the butt? It's very weird. But, you know, the musical is people in cat makeup and costumes, and they look weird too. So it's not that, again, I'm just, you know, going to go back to the thing of, like, no matter what, if you object to this trailer, like, you're going to object to Cats. Like, that's just, it is what it is. If you're a fan of Cats the musical, you may still be disappointed in this because so far as I can tell, every fan of musicals on stage seemingly hates every adaptation of a musical for film, mainly because the singing is not that good because they have actors instead of the you know, people who should be doing it, blah, 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 blah. But like notably this director, Uber, he did the adaptation of Les Miserables, which everybody kvetched about. And that's, you know, just how the cookie crumbles on this stuff. So we'll find out this Christmas when our minds are blown, unless they, for some reason, released this movie early, because they released the trailer early. That would be kind of funny, though. It's just like, here you go, this Thanksgiving. It's like, wait, what? But I highly doubt anybody's releasing anything early on this movie when it comes to the final product.
Did you see anything more specific than that featurette on the actual tech behind it? This is all performance capture, right? Like, they're not actually trying to blend any live action. They have some good models of faces that they integrated into these models of cat bodies, right?
I saw no further information than what you saw in the featurette.
Okay. But it looks to you like it looks to me that this is a fully 3D rendered film.
No, because they're using the sets. I think they had the actors and the actresses on set perform these things, and then they put a digital cat on top of the actors and actresses.
Yeah, that's fair, I suppose.
And the faces, I believe facial features, are in many cases sourced from the plates or blended with plate elements. But in several of the wide shots, there's no reason to do that. Mm. But there are some oddities with the face when they're turning their heads and stuff, that to me scream that those elements are integrated from a 2D source with a 3D asset. And no matter how good your 3D tracking is, that's always never 100%, because you're going to have lighting changes and other things that are not going to be exactly the same.
So there were some shots that looked to you like there was a masked out 2D face plate comped into this 3D body and integrated in some way.
Yes. Not every shot, but it did seem like elements of the actors' faces were taken and put in, especially with Jennifer Hudson.
Elements, I suppose, yeah, because there's a lot of fur that comes in very close into the cheekbones and some nose things going on, and I think like some mouth and teeth things and stuff too. But I don't, and then in some shots there were some eyes that looked very clearly recreated too. So it's, I don't know, maybe there's a variety of methods being used to try and keep you on your toes.
I don't think there's any one thing that's being used. I think it's a lot of stuff, and it just depends on the shot. Like there's a shot of Idris Elba as Mistopheles where his eyes are glowing, like cat's eyes that are catching like moonlight or something. And that's obviously not something they caught on set. It's just going to be a mixture of different bits and pieces. But I do feel like what you're seeing in the trailer was something that was filmed in space in this set with a camera and these people performing it. They're not cheating in that regard, but their ability to put this digital fur technology, as they say, and integrate it with whatever bits and pieces they're using is a little uneven. And as we've noted before, trailers can improve, especially when they're this far away from the release date of the project. So who knows, but, I contend that even if this was flawless and impeccable and you couldn't tell the difference and it seemed just like a real life cat person, that you would still, be unhappy, if you were unhappy with this trailer, that it's not merely a technical flaw that, that is keeping you away from it.
One of these days, I do want to get into some of the more technical CG rendering compositing conversation, because this trailer had a little bit of something that I see fairly often, but I don't even know how to describe it, so it's probably not worth bringing up unless I have something I can point at. But there is a form of motion. Typically, you see it on edges where you can tell that something has been keyed. Even if it's a really good key, you see a sort of stuttery motion that just doesn't look correct. It's not right to say it doesn't look smooth. I don't even really know how to describe it. It almost looks like the motion version of image compression or something, where you can just tell it's like that was rendered, or that was the edge of that is clipped and it's not correct. And I always wonder where that comes from and what we can do to get better at that, because it happens on a lot of different stuff, and maybe it's just the nature of, you know, combining things and the fact that your eyes can tell the very subtle differences where the edges should be blurring into each other a little bit more than they are on screen.
Yeah, and you know, with integration stuff, you're dealing with the fact that real life has motion blur as recorded by the camera in a specific way, and what's coming out of your render package is going to produce motion blur in not exactly the same way. Even if you have people match move the same stuff, especially if they're match moving something that's moving in a variety of directions. So like if you have people putting together like car comps or something, everything's kind of moving in a linear fashion. Sure, the vanishing point might be in a slightly different spot or whatever, depending on the shot, but nothing's really like pivoting or turning or anything. So those are a little easier to fix because you can fiddle with that kind of stuff in the comp. You can exaggerate the motion blur on the 3D element, or you can add a little additional motion blur to the edges of the 2D element, which is something that usually happens. Because also when you're keying something, you're keying based on color, and because the density of that color is going to change in a motion blurred region as it's bleeding from the background color to the moving object's color, it's not, you know, it's not like, oh, look, you get this flawless edge. It's going to always be something where it's like, yeah, well, this is the background, this is the foreground, but like your background probably has like some shadowy whatever bits and pieces in it that you're keying out, so you're going to have a tighter key that's going to cut off some of that motion blurred edge. Or you'll have like a little bit of an expanded key and you're going to have a bright edge around your motion blurred edge. And so sometimes what will happen is people, you know, choke the mat, so to speak, which is not actually, you're not choking someone named Matt, especially not somebody named Matt Alexander. What you're doing is you're taking the range and reducing it so that, it's a higher contrast, range, that you're not getting those subtle, that you're not getting that subtle fall off. And then you're adding that subtle fall off yourself afterwards. Something like an edge extend or whatever, and then trying to do a motion blur on top of it to match to whatever the CG is doing.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just the nature of the fact that motion blur and soft edges or natural looking edges are difficult to combine in a way that looks completely photoreal, because it's not even really necessarily that I ever see like a dark edge or a light edge typically in these cases. It's just that it's like kind of you catch it out of the peripheral vision a little bit and part of the frame, and something is moving in such a way that you can just tell it's not part of the background correctly. And I wish I had better words to describe it, but it just looks kind of like stuttery, wrong motion, even though there's nothing particularly stuttery about it, but it's just, yeah. It sticks out.
Well, it can seem stuttery if the motion blur doesn't match, because you're looking at something that's 24 frames per second. If you were looking at something that was a higher frame rate, it might actually blend in more.
well, let's not get carried away.
Yeah, I mean, don't turn on motion smoothing, kids. But that's, you know, a debate for another day when maybe there's a more specific example we can dive into. But I think that concludes all the stuff we can really say about cats at this point. Like I said at the time with the trailer, at the featurette, I am entertained by this. Not just because I can't help but snicker at it, but because it just seems like such a fascinating thing. Like, no matter what the outcome of this is, it's going to be something you want to talk about, regardless of your feelings.
They're going for it. They're doing a big musical feature film with cats.
Yes.
All right.
Developed chests. But and then we have Top Gun.
Yeah, Top Gun Maverick.
Yes, and Top Gun Maverick is interesting. Like we said at the start of the show, we both knew it was coming, but neither of us knew when or what, because it just seemed to be in development for forever. But they released the thing, and it's got music that harkens back to the original. It's got cinematography, which isn't exactly the same, but
it's got that weird deep, what is it, like a bass sound effect or something that is very specific to Top Gun and Tony Scott movies.
Yeah. I think it was Harold Faltermeyer that did the original, and I think Hans Zimmer is doing this one, but I don't have the information in front of me, so it was just a guess. It's nice of whoever's doing this, if it is Hans, to source the original, because I feel like a lot of fans would be kind of annoyed if it came on and all of a sudden it sounded like, I don't know, a Michael Giacchino score or something. But the cinematography really stuck out to me a little bit more, because it reproduces some things about framing, but not necessarily about it's not the same color timing as the original.
It's not as orange.
Yeah, like the original is so orange. Like the very first shots of that movie are just like orange, orange, orange. But you know, who knows? Maybe there's some of that lurking in here in different shots.
Plus, in that interview that you sent me from Conan, where Tom Cruise was there, which I also watched live on television because I'm an old person who watches television. I think he said they finished shooting the movie like the Tuesday before he was on stage for that interview. So it's very possible that this is like quick pass, not fully color corrected.
Yeah. And this, you know, it's very blue green. But you got your horizontal mini blinds casting shadows in in rooms, which, you know, the original did.
There's not nearly as much smoke in any of the rooms because, you know, it's 2019. We don't do that
indoors.
In our enclosed office. I mean, I don't think Ed Harris in his little Air Force outfit is going to be vaping in his office, so that's not really going to help us.
That would be so funny.
Ed Harris is staring down Tom Cruise, and then he hits his little jewel. No, that would not be intimidating.
Yeah, so Ed Harris has, I guess, the... What would you say? The Tom Skerritt role? Sort of?
Kind of. Or a little bit of the...
Ironside?
Michael Ironside's role, yeah. He's kind of both of them together. He's a little bit of the father figure and the hard-ass combined.
Father hard-ass. So he's there to talk about how Tom Cruise won't die and he won't retire and he's stubbornly not being promoted and whatever. And so he's just in the program, apparently flying F-14 jets very low to the ground, which is unique since the plane has been decommissioned for, I think, over a decade now. He's back to his old stunts and tricks and what have you. There seems to be this implication that his time is over and he's going to be out of there. And it's like, but Ed, aren't you older than him? Or what's going on, Ed?
Well, he's got a desk job.
Yeah. But anyway, he keeps talking about what a relic Tom Cruise's character is, what a relic Maverick is, and what a relic all this is. And how he's a dinosaur and blah, 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 blah. And then,
I mean, to be fair, a guy who is as old as Tom Cruise and is just kind of a lunatic in a fighter jet is probably, they probably just keep him around because they don't want to deal with the paperwork. Like, he's probably not very useful in the modern Air Force. I mean, this movie is going to prove otherwise because that's why it exists, but everyone else is probably like, what do you, don't you have anything else to do? Like, retire. Like, go buy a little bungalow on a beach somewhere and just, like, you know, learn how to pour cocktails.
Yeah. And there are some flashbacks to bars, and I understand. I got the cocktails.
Yeah, okay. I don't think that's a flashback. That's just a part of the whole Top Gun experience is that people are going to sing in bars and play piano and stuff.
Yeah, but you noticed that was Goose, right?
No, I don't think it is.
Okay.
I think it's somebody who looks similar to him because there's also I think it's the same guy who spins the football whilst shirtless and shiny.
I thought it was Goose. In a flashback.
Maybe it's Goose. I don't know. It's possible.
All right. Well, we're very detail oriented people as we were complaining about the edges of strobing motion blur.
It's somebody else with a mustache. I swear to God, it's not Goose. Maybe it's Goose's long lost son or something. He had a daughter, didn't he?
Yeah. I am curious to find out what they're going to do with Tom Cruise's former flame and all that because I don't want to watch another movie where the guy comes back to a role after a really long time and he's older. And the love interest from the first movie has died in the intervening years that, off camera. That doesn't... I don't like that. Like, that happened in Blade Runner 2049. That just happens a lot.
It's either going to be that or they're just not going to mention her, but Jennifer Connelly is in this movie probably for a reason.
Blah. But... Yeah.
What's wrong with Jennifer Connelly?
No. I mean, I like her, but sure, just the fact that they're going to... It's just, I don't understand why they can't just have people, you know.
And confirm, thanks to IMDb and the fact that it tags people in photos, the man playing the piano that looks like Goose is apparently Miles Teller with a mustache.
What?
And the man shirtlessly flexing with the football is Glenn Powell. I don't know who that is.
Miles Teller with a mustache.
Yeah.
I did not have that on my bingo card.
That would be a really weird bingo card if you did. Boy.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I like our episode of Top Gun that we did a long time ago, so we'll probably do an episode about this one. And our episode of Top Gun earned us hats and things.
That's
from,
right. It's, where's my hat? Yeah, it's right above me right now.
Yeah, I got it here on, it's always on my podcasting table. It's a little dusty. I should dust it off. It's a little disrespectful.
So dusty in here.
But it's a, I'm not crying, you're crying. United States Navy Fighter Weapons School Flex Fit hat. A little tight though, but so I don't wear it, but it's nice. I have it here on my dining room table.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was a good gift.
Teller's character is called Bradley Bradshaw.
That's not a name.
That's
who named him Stan Lee.
So many of the characters on IMDb do not have names. You have Maverick, you have Iceman, who Val Kilmer apparently has a cameo. You have Bradley Bradshaw, you have Mission Controller 5, and you have Administrator, and everyone else doesn't have names yet.
All right. Negative Ghost Rider.
Oh, Bill Pullman's kid is in this one. I just saw him in Bad Times at the El Royale, and he was pretty good. The movie was terrible.
Oh, I heard that about it, which disappointed me because I was looking forward to it because of the trailer, and then never followed through because everybody said it was poop.
I mean, there's a lot of Chris Hemsworth wearing very little clothing.
Maybe I'll watch it.
He's wearing it. It's just like hanging off of him in most ways. But it's, boy, is that not a movie. Anyway.
Disappointing.
Yeah, Top Gun Maverick, Tom Cruise is pushing his luck, I think, in this trailer at least. So, he usually... I enjoy the Tom Cruise. I know you do not. But in this particular trailer, even I'm going, why are you still here, Maverick? But I'm excited to see it because, they're paying the correct homages so far. Like, he's even got his old motorcycle, which is hilarious and stupid looking. And then they cut to him riding a modern motorcycle, which I think is a Suzuki. What am I looking at here? It's hard to tell. No, it's not a Suzuki. Anyway.
Really important detail.
The original one was a Kawasaki, but I'm not sure this is a Kawasaki. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, I'm excited to see the Top Gun Maverick. I mean, I don't know how excited I really am, but I'll see it.
Yeah.
This is Joseph Kaczynski. Why were we talking about what's his name?
Joseph Kaczynski, who
is directing? What? Joseph Kaczynski is directing Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, I thought it was.
Chris McQuarrie, didn't he? Was he writing on it? What was he doing here?
I don't know. He did something, didn't he?
Yeah, he was writing on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wait. Oh. What do I know Joseph Kaczynski from? The name.
Tron Legacy and Oblivion.
Oh yeah.
So there's that. His directing credits: Top Gun Maverick, most recently. Previous to that, Taco Bell Web of Fries video short. Only the Brave. I'm not sure what that is. Another short film, then Oblivion and Tron Legacy.
Man, I think Tron Legacy really did a number in his career.
Especially considering it was the first thing he did.
Yeah. I kind of like Tron Legacy, except for like
the story.
Yeah,
and what happens in it?
Like everything after like the first 45 minutes.
Production design's good. Cinematography's cool. Mm-hmm. Effects are cool.
We should talk about the Tron movies one of these days. Especially the original, because I know you love it.
I've never seen it, and I don't want to.
Oh. I don't think you would like it.
I've seen still frames of it, and I don't think I want to see the rest of it.
It's... I think you would like the aesthetic of it. I think you would hate the movie making of it.
Okay.
Yeah. It has a whole 80s... technological thing going on that I think you'd find very, very appealing, although just you'd be crushingly bored by it. But that's interesting. I didn't know Joseph Kaczynski did this. I just assumed it was McQuarrie because I kept hearing his name. I didn't realize it was just writing.
And there was that he was in the video with Tom Cruise talking about motion smoothing when they were on set for this movie, I think, right?
Yes, because it was about their Mission Impossible movie being released on home video or something, and they wanted people to turn it off.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, Todd Vaziri was retweeting the crap out of it.
I was going to say, see twitter.com/@TVaziri for further information.
Yeah, just follow T. Vaziri, and then eventually he'll retweet the motion smoothing video again, maybe four or five times.
It's very important to him.
Yes.
Turning off motion smoothing is Todd's religion.
That and retweeting. I mean, what would Todd do if you, like, somebody just secretly disabled this retweet button?
Did you see the thing the other day? I don't remember where the article was, but it was the guy who initially came up with and programmed the retweet button. He was like, yeah, that was probably a really bad idea.
Oh, that's funny. Whoopsie-daisy.
He said something to the tune of, like, it's like handing a toddler a firearm or something.
Wow. That's a bold statement.
There was some terrible metaphor like that.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway.
There have been bigger repercussions than what Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Todd Vaziri does with it. But
is that his fully qualified name now?
It sure is. It's not often I get to say that about people I know. Then
maybe
we got...
someday you can be Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Joseph Rosenstiel.
Doubtful. Because you have to work on something.
Movies?
Yeah. I don't do that. I do episodic, Dan.
Episodic? You mean yeah. Television?
Yes. You know, lowly television? TV.
Don't say episodic. Don't try to church it up.
but speaking of other films by Academy Award winning people, we have Ang Lee's Gemini Man, which had this trailer that came out a while ago showing current day Will Smith battling the CGI recreation of something that seems inspired by what Will Smith kind of used to look like. A lot of people are like, wow, I can't tell the difference. And I'm like,
we have a lot of reference footage of what Will Smith looked like when he was young. So it's so easy for us to recreate it. And I forwarded you that little featurette, which I had seen on my own a couple days ago, in addition to the fact that one or two people that I know just out of the blue sent me that, and they're like, hey, look at this. And I was like, yeah, it's not, the words and the images are not completely connected there with the whole, it's flawless, and it looks just like him, and the technology has now made it possible that he can fight the younger version of himself. It's like, well, you're doing a good job here. There's some good, there's that one shot that they keep repeating where he cries a little bit and he looks angry, where it's old Will Smith with all of his performance capture dots on his face and his weird little headband. And then it does the quick little star wipe or whatever and shows the young version and the little tear rolls down his cheek too. It's nice. It's a nice CG, recreated face, head, whatever. But it doesn't look 100% photoreal.
No, it's
at all.
Is it just me, or does the skin seem very soft? Maybe some of this is the compression or whatever.
It's not the compression. Okay. Some of the, again, this being a trailer, I'm sure some of these shots aren't finished because, again, the results vary widely from shot to shot. Like, there's one or two shots where they're in that, like, dark cave area where he, like, spins around, and then he's on the left side of the frame, and it's just, like, it may as well be the Scorpion King. Like, his face is not moving. It's just, it's like a solid object there. And, it's probably no coincidence that all of the shots in this featurette do not involve young Will Smith moving his face or talking or, his head moves, but he doesn't say anything or, like, open his mouth or anything. And then there's those scenes where he's on a motorcycle where he's doing a bit of a Social Network where he's got, like, a hat and sunglasses on, and they're, like, trying to roto the young face in around the hat and sunglasses. And it's like, that's, I can see what you're doing. I see your edges there. This is another one of those things where, like, you can see that the motion is wrong, and it's, again, probably the edges, as you pointed out earlier. But it's like, they're almost doing themselves a disservice because they're like, look how good this looks, and it makes us look at it with extra scrutiny. And it's like, that's about as good as other movies are doing right now. So, okay.
I mean, I'll give him this. It's better than Clue in Tron Legacy. Technology's come a little ways, but, you know,
he has better eyes than Clue. Does he have better hair and facial features?
Yeah, but they also don't do the Marvel. What's this? How am I blanking on the name of the studio? The one that does all the beauty work for them.
Isn't that Lola?
Yes, Lola. It's not the Lola trick of like we're gonna hide everything in the band of shadow that goes around the hairline.
Paint over all of your wrinkles and kind of blur everything a little bit.
Yeah. If you watch the Marvel movies where they've de-aged somebody, just look at that hairline. Just keep looking at it. It's doing some funky stuff. It is otherwise impressive what they managed to do with mainly a lot of tiny little 2D tracks of little tiny facial micro movements and patching on little bits and pieces of textures onto things. It's a lot of cobbled together work to get that to work. And this is a completely different approach for Gemini Man where,
right. This is full CG. Yeah. And, one thing that in trying to think of like what the current high watermark for this sort of look is, and again, they're going for a photoreal person. So maybe it's not an apples to apples comparison, but I feel like, Avengers, what's his name? Thanos is probably one of the better full CG facial characters that actually has expressions that look like expressions that a person would make, and again maybe if they were trying to make Thanos look like an actual human being from Earth, our Uncanny Valley meter would tick a little bit higher, but I feel like Thanos looked better than this stuff does.
I think your hunch that it's precisely because he's purple and has like
he's giant purple and has a weird crinkly chin.
Yeah, his raisin jawline. If they were trying to make a replica of Josh Brolin, I think you'd be in a different situation.
They just made Josh Brolin and made him purple.
They did have a replica of Josh Brolin they were using for a reference once they captured footage, but they didn't show that to us, so we don't know how closely that captured his performance. And they also didn't try to like shade it and render it and integrate it with a plate, which is another obstacle for people. And those sorts of situations are greatly aided by the fact that if you make them not as we would expect them to be, i.e. purple raisin jawline, then you can do more stuff because you can get away with more things because the expectation isn't there.
I don't know. I still feel like I'm looking at some still images of the Thanos right now, and just the part of it's probably just the articulation and the cheekbones and the weird like forehead structure he's got around his eyes. I think they did some really great work on Thanos, and I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
I liked it.
Several different studios did really great work on Thanos, right.
and his eyes looked great too.
Different ways, because you had Weta Digital Domain. Who else was doing it? I think ILM too. Everybody that worked on, basically there were, I think at least three studios in the last two movies that worked on Thanos shots where they had to have a facial capture system that worked for what they were doing, individually, apart from everybody else. Cause none of them have the same pipeline. And they had to have a whole render, texturing, shading, everything system that worked and matched to the other studio's final stuff, which is just an incredible balancing act that I would not want to be a part of. Because that just sounds like a nightmare. But it's a completely different problem set from the Will Smith thing, because Weta's doing the whole Will Smith younger thing for this movie, apparently. And I feel like... My main issues with what they have shown us is mainly in the skin smoothness and detail. There is a shot where they're like, hey, look, he's got pimples because he's young. And it's like, you don't really see that in the other shots. And when they do the star wipe of the one shot of him crying, the Will Smith seems to have an absence of detail on his forehead in his current age. I'm not going to speculate as to whether or not that is because of any sort of anti-aging treatments that he may have performed on his forehead, but there is a lack of definition that is there just to begin with. It almost seems like if you look at older photos of him, that his face seemed different when he would furrow his brow. But whatever. It's still a work in progress. We'll see the final result when it comes out. It's just strange the framing of how accurate and great it is. And this is also, interestingly enough, another Jerry Bruckheimer thing, because that's also apparently what's going on with your Top Gun Maverick.
What, they're digitally deforeheading him?
No. I meant Jerry Bruckheimer is involved producing both of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to make sure that I give proper credit to the weirdness that is Jerry Bruckheimer.
Yeah, he's still there doing his thing.
Yeah. You'd think he'd like be tired by now, but I don't know. Some people live for the job. Assume that's him. Although Will Smith said in an interview that Jerry Bruckheimer's mellowed out over the years, which, you know, I find easy to believe. Probably can't do that much stuff in the modern era. And
are you talking about like extracurricular activities, like hiking?
Yes, he loves hiking.
Mm-hmm.
He's famous for his hiking.
infamous for his hiking.
Speaking of people who are getting old and who look aged and questionable de-aging, let's talk about the final thing. And I put this on the list, even though it is a television show, because episodic. Because I was more excited about this than any trailer that I have seen recently. And I am going to be completely upfront and say the reason why I'm excited has very little to do with the quality of shots or framing or interesting makeup or sets or location shooting or effects or anything like that. It's just purely the little breadcrumbs of fan service story garbage that's sprinkled through this trailer. Like, that is...
Is it the wine? You like the wine?
Yeah, I totally love... I dig the wine. This is CBS All Access. It has their new Star Trek series, Star Trek Picard. This is being produced by Alex Kurtzman, who is famous for being a part of the JJ reboot of the movies, where they split off into a different timeline. CC Quentin Tarantino.
I don't get it.
you can't tell me Benedict Cumberbatch is Khan.
Nobody can explain it to me. I asked JJ. He's like, just don't worry about it. Nobody understands. Nobody knew how complicated Star Trek could be.
Yeah, JJ just wants to get off the phone call. I forget who described it to me like that, but it was very apt. But this is, you know, Kurtzman, and he was producing Star Trek Discovery, which was the series that sort of reignited some interest in Star Trek after it had been waning for a bit, because J.J. Kurtzman and Robert Orci, they all got together and made Star Trek 2009, and then Star Trek Into Darkness, and then J.J.'s like, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to go do Star Wars because I love Star Wars and I don't give a crap about Star Trek. And then it went to Justin Lin, and some less competent storytelling occurred and some less than stellar directing happened. We had Star Trek Beyond, and then it kind of like, didn't end on a great note. And then the movies have been in development hell in this entire time since then. So the television situation is different because CBS has the rights to it instead of Paramount, because the company had split back in 2006. And so CBS had done Discovery, with Brian Fuller, and the whole thing was it's going to be going back and different ship in an earlier part of the timeline, blah, 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 blah. But then Brian Fuller and, management disagreed and he left. And then Robert Kurtzman tried to spend the next year and a half trying to fix Discovery. That's doing its own thing. And his little side passion project was greenlighting other Star Trek stuff that was going on, including this Star Trek Picard series, which he was only able to lure Patrick Stewart into because they had what he described as a compelling story. And they had Michael Chabon, the writer, famous writer, working on this. But he's famous author writer, not famous TV writer. So, you know, mileage may vary. We'll find out what happens when we watch the show. But I think some of this had to do with like Patrick Stewart's feelings around working on Logan, where he was the aged Professor Xavier and dealing with age and your legacy. And I feel like he had the opportunity to deal with age and his legacy when it came to Star Trek, because they left on a bit of a sour note for him again. Way back in time in, I believe it was 2004, you had Star Trek Nemesis kill the franchise in terms of the movies until the 2009 reboot from J.J.
Is that the one with the big blue room?
No, that was Insurrection. Nemesis is the one where Tom Hardy played a young Patrick Stewart.
Spoilers.
It would be impossible for me to spoil that movie for you, Dan. It's pre-spoiled. It's worst Star Trek movie, quantitatively.
Okay.
Yes. I'll make you watch it someday.
Just yeah, well, it's not
care. You're gonna agree with me one of these days.
I'm sure I will.
But this whole thing of, like, you know, didn't leave it in a great spot, can leave it in a better spot, having the money to do it in a short episodic arc where it's not, you're committing to like 26 episodes or something. They're doing like, I don't know, 12, 14. I have no idea what they greenlit, but a much shorter run of a series with compressed production schedule, and he can shoot it in California and get it all over with. Like, that gave them the opportunity to approach this and entice Patrick Stewart back to do it. And from that, they were able to entice some other people. And there had been speculation about what other people would be coming along for the ride, because the series is about Picard. So it's not the continuing adventures of the Enterprise. It is an exploration of his character for the series. That's what anchors the entire thing. And this trailer answered some of those questions, where we got to see some of what he's going to be dealing with. Now, I know what I could take away from this, because I've watched a lot of Star Trek, Dan. I don't know if you're aware of this, but...
No, I had no idea.
There are things where you can see, like, visually on screen, certain stuff occurring, and you're just like, well, that's this, and that's that, and that's the other thing. But for you, I have to imagine, it had almost no impact at all, because none of this had any grounding in anything you knew already. So while I had these little emotional breadcrumbs to follow, you had nothing.
Well, I mean, there was Brent Spiner was in a drawer, and then the lady with the really bad fake prosthetic glued to her face was there that other people seemed to like.
Okay.
That's
Jerry Ryan. Is that who you're thinking of?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I guess.
Okay, so
blonde lady, or did she have red hair or something? I forget what she...
Blonde.
Yeah, blonde lady.
Yes. Okay, so...
And then there was somebody's kid who had a hoodie, and they were like, help me, Obi-Wan, you're my only hope, or something.
So...
Is she a known character?
No, she's not. But it is heavily implied from this trailer that she is related to a foe that Picard had dealt with in the past.
Oh, because she doesn't even know what she is.
Yes.
She's gonna end us or whatever, because you're harboring a fugitive or something.
Well, it seems that she is related to a sort of race, not really a race, but the Borg.
Oh, right, because they show the big cube.
Yes. And of course, because Jerry Ryan is there, she is a former Borg. Recovering Borg.
Recovering Borg.
Jonathan Del Arco, who played a former Borg on Star Trek The Next Generation, is also apparently in the series. And Brent Spiner is in this series, and he has had some entanglements with the Borg in the past on a variety of occasions. So this... series is going to deal heavily and a lot with the Borg. There are also Romulans, and what they're going to do with Romulans in this, because what you noticed from Star Trek 2009 is that Ambassador Spock had the red matter, and he was going to stop the Romulan star from blah blah blahing, and instead it had the whoopsie doopsie effect of destroying Romulus.
You just didn't even get there in time.
Oh, yeah, sure, whatever.
I remember.
And so they all got blasted back in time, Nero and Spock, and that set up that Kelvin timeline. But in Picard's current present timeline, in what he's doing in the show, Romulus is, you know, not so great, because that has happened. So there's going to be implications that'll pan out from that. So there's a lot of interesting stuff to mine here. And it also seems that he's retired and has gone to live on the vineyard that he has. And if you had watched the series, that would have an emotional impact, because after Picard was assimilated by the Borg,
He got Borged.
Yeah, he got Borged big time. And he was unassimilated because of his crew. And then he's like, I'm going to take a vacation. And so he went to go see his brother, who ran the family vineyard, Chateau Picard. the brother was giving him crap about not also running the family thing and not taking care of it and blah, 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 blah. So there's a sense of obligation and guilt around that. And it's linked to also the Borg stuff too. So it's a lot of Borg stuff, which is interesting, because the best Star Trek, The Next Generation movie is Star Trek First Contact, which is the Borg. And when I had told you that I put us on an accelerated schedule of trying to get through Star Trek movies, I wanted to eventually get to Star Trek, The Next Generation. I think I'm going to skip Generations. It's not a very good movie. But I feel like it's an important movie to eventually get to. But the trailer is just very interesting to me, and I'm very interested to see how this all comes together. And unfortunately, it's not coming out until 2020, so I'll find out then. But
this right around the corner.
This is hands down the most interesting thing that I saw at a Comic-Con, and not because of any visual reason. No fancy flying jets, no interesting locations, because it's the Anaheim Convention Center, nothing really flashy happening, but just a few little bits and pieces of interesting character stuff.
Maybe he's going to PodCon. Isn't that where PodCon was?
VidCon is what I think you're thinking of.
No, didn't you go down to Anaheim for a podcast thing?
Yeah, but that was the Earwolf Listen Fest. I don't remember what the name of it was. It wasn't the Hank Green PodCon thing. That was separate.
Hank Green, that's the country singer.
Sort of. There's a YouTube guy who also wrote that Fault in Our Stars book or whatever. has podcasts. But they did the PodCon.
Well, I got canceled.
PodCon?
Yeah.
Oh, what a shame.
You didn't see that? It was like a month or two ago.
Oh, no. I'm not up to date on my cons.
Not a fan of podcasting.
No. The Wrath of Cons. But
see, I'm not even typing that into the title suggestions. How dare you?
I think we've exhausted our topics, because I don't think you have anything to say about Picard. I just wanted to have something on this list that I could talk about and be happy about, because everybody thinks I'm such a poo-poo duty head because I don't like anything.
Such a Debbie Downer all the time.
Yeah. I can like things. You just need to make them very specific to my interests.
you got Picard trailers. You got genuine Florida-based Cuban sandwiches,
mm-hmm.
Iced coffee, cargo shorts and polo shirts.
all the great stuff. All the great hits.
Ray-Bans, but not the plasticky Wayfarers.
No, you got the metal frames.
Mm-hmm. I like the Wayfarers. They barely fit my head, though.
I like the metal frame ones because they look like the Wayfarers, but they're lighter, and you get the little nose pads, so they sit more easily on your face, or on my face, anyways.
I don't like that. Yeah, I don't do nose pads.
Yeah, I have the bridge of my nose is, I don't know, high or something. I don't know. The acetate frame glasses where they have the no pad or the flat part built in. You know, mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the ones I wear now.
Yeah, those slide right off the bridge of the nose.
Yeah.
So they're no good. I have to have the nose pads.
Mm. Mm. I'm sorry.
Thank you for your understanding. My difficult personal issues.
I too have an unusual nose, but we're not going to get into it.
Yeah. But anything else you wanted to talk about before we wrap up this episode, Dan? Any John Travolta trailers that you saw recently that you want to shout out to?
Not going to talk about the John Travolta trailer where he has a dead animal on his head.
And he tries to make a dead animal out of the star he's obsessively following.
He does a very poor job of illustrating whatever that nerdy character is supposed to be.
I think it's supposed to be Kathy Bates from Misery, but not...
I feel like it's supposed to be somebody like kind of on the spectrum, and it's not useful.
No. Well, I guess that's another way to read it. He seems... they seem to be wanting to make a horror movie about a person who doesn't respect the personal boundaries of stardom and takes the star. So, you know, I don't know. There's stuff to mine there, I suppose.
I would be pretty horrified if John Travolta showed up in my house unannounced.
With that weird, like, Julius Caesar toupee haircut thing.
Doesn't even matter. Any circumstance whatsoever. If my doorbell rang and it was John Travolta, I would slam the door, lock it, and go hide under my bed.
What if he just turned on a TV in your house when you were asleep and you went downstairs and saw he was watching TV and it was an old movie that you liked?
Oh, if he was being Chili Palmer, I would talk to him like Chili Palmer. And I would say, look at me. And I would say, get the hell out of my house. What's the matter with you? What are you doing here? The closest private airport is like 15 miles away.
Well, yep.
Summertime trailers part two.
Yeah, and I promise we're not going to keep doing this because
I don't promise anything.
Well,
we owe you nothing, listen. No, that's not true.
I promise we're not going to keep doing trailer episodes consecutively. Because I think we've exhausted the interesting ones from Comic-Con, and unless there's another convention next weekend that I don't know about.
There may be. We don't know. We're very bad at keeping track of this stuff.
Then we're probably not going to be talking about trailers in the immediate interim. Hopefully we'll get back to some exciting movie topics.
Tune in next week.